It's remarkable to see where the Cairns economy is at. If we were to look back 12 months ago and say we'd have strong employment, we'd have our economy roaring back to life, you'd be laughed out of town. And yet, here we are. Things are surprisingly buoyant. One man I was keen to talk to about this very issue for some insights and some data crunching is Pete Faulkner from Conus Economics. Pete, welcome to the King Review.
Thanks, Gavin. Good to be with you.
We had some interesting data out in the last 48 hours about our employment stats. Fill us in on what that's telling us.
Yeah, so this is the regional data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics for the month of May. We saw the state and national data last week, and that was incredibly strong. You may have seen headlines around unemployment rate nationally falling to 5.1. In Queensland, it's down to 5.4. And as you said in your intro, I mean, hard to believe, you know, if you told us that 12 months ago, you would have been laughed out of the place.
That's right.
It's extraordinary. And yet here we are. And it's been an incredible 12 months. The recovery has been solid right across the country. It's been, you know, there's been areas that have done better than some. But Cairns, perhaps surprising to a lot of people, have done pretty well. And May, again, we saw a good increase in trend employment. We're up about 1,800 from April. The unemployment rate is down sub 5% for May. We're sitting at 4.8%, which is just extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Can you remember, when were we below 5% on that unemployment rate before?
You've got to go back to basically a couple of years. Mm. So Cairns, you know, if you remember prior to COVID, and in fact, as we ran through the sort of end of 2019 and into the very beginning of 2020, the Cairns employment market was really strong. Mm. So if we go back that far, we were around about this sort of 5%, sub 5% level. But as I say, you know, if you'd said back in April, May last year that we'd be sub 5% again within 12 months, nobody would have believed
it. You'd be laughed out of town.
And yet, absolutely. And yet here we sit. Now, we do need to temper that a little by the realisation that part of the reason we've seen the unemployment rate so low is that our participation rate has fallen.
Now, can you explain, Pete, to listeners how this works, the participation rate? Just give us a layperson's explanation of what that is and how that impacts that unemployment rate.
Sure. So basically, participation rate is a measure of the percentage of those that potentially could be working. So the working age population, so essentially everybody over the age of 15. The participation measures the percentage of that population who are either employed or unemployed. The sum of employed and unemployed is what's called the labour force. The unemployment rate is the number of people unemployed divided by the labour force. And what that means is that if the participation rate falls, so the percentage of people, the potential within the population who could be in the labour force declines, then even if you don't see a big increase in employment, you'll see a decrease in the unemployment rate.
The rate will drop. And so why would that participation rate drop as it has in the latest stats?
Yeah, so there's a number of reasons why it could. The first is simply that people remove themselves from the labour force. For instance, if you were to take up studying, for instance, you know, you decide to, you're 25 and you're going to go off and do a TAFE course or a uni course or whatever, you would drop out of the labour force. If you were a 60-year-old and you decide that actually you're going to retire, you would drop out of the labour force. If you were a new parent and you decided you were going to take 6 months off to stay home with the bub, you would drop out of the labour force. So there's a number of reasons why you would drop out of the labour force, and that would impact the participation rate. Another interesting one is that it's possible, and we don't yet know because we don't have data this accurate yet, but it's possible that if you saw a decline in population, what you're actually seeing is not a decline in the participation rate, but simply a mismatch between the actual number of in the population and the estimated population that the ABS used to calculate the participation rate. Mm. So if there's fewer people around than the ABS think there is, they would be seeing a decline in the participation rate, but in fact it wouldn't have been declining. It's simply that the population numbers have fallen. Now, we don't get population data that accurate.
And that's why in these latest stats from May, we've seen that unemployment rate fall. It's not necessarily that we've had a massive boom in people entering the workforce. We've just had, as you said, more people dropping out of those calculations, and so that participation rate lowering.
It's, yeah. Mm. Exactly. I mean, it's not all of that, because we have now got back to more people employed than we had in May last year. So our annual employment growth is now positive, but only slightly positive. We're up sort of 0.4% for the year. And if you compare that, the trend estimate across Australia is running, or across Queensland rather, is running somewhere around about 7-7.5% over the year. Now, that's obviously, there's a lot of base effect in that, because clearly May last year, as we all know, was pretty weak.
Was pretty bad. It was pretty bad, to put it mildly.
Exactly.
Is it too early, Pete, to talk about the impact of the end of JobKeeper? We've had a couple of months' worth of stats. We heard, you know, the economy would fall off a cliff, particularly with our tourism industry. But what are you seeing in those early figures around the impact of the end of JobKeeper?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. So as you say, we've now had 2 months of data post the end of JobKeeper. And that narrative around, you know, it's going to be an absolute disaster and the economy's going to fall off a cliff, clearly hasn't happened. The ABS last month, actually, when they released the April data, said we don't see any noticeable shift due to JobKeeper. There was some, it's difficult to tease it out, because the end of JobKeeper happened to coincide with things like Easter holidays, school holidays at the end of March, beginning of April. So the seasonal impact of those confuses the data and makes it difficult to pick out individual elements. However, what you can say is that now that we've seen April and we've seen May, and both of them are indicating that the improving trend on employment is continuing and doesn't even appear to have slowed much post JobKeeper, I think what we can say is that the sort of dire predictions of, as you say, a cliff simply haven't come true. The reality was that many of the people who were left on JobKeeper, and let's face it, there weren't that many in terms of a percentage of those that started out, there weren't many that left by the end of March. Most of them, it would appear at least, have managed to hang on to jobs that they already had.
So some good news on the jobs front. Be interesting to see how that pans out over the rest of the year, that's for sure. Mm. Now, Pete, the other quick topic I wanted to catch up with you about is migration. Now, we've heard for decades politicians from both sides really talk about overseas migration is critical to our economic growth. We bring in particularly skilled migrants, they fill some labour force gaps, but of course they end up contributing immensely to the economy. But because of COVID, we've had this really bizarre forced experiment where the borders have been closed. And so the last info I was reading is that we've had negative net migration. And so we've had no new migrants coming in and settling in Australia or working in Australia. And yet our economy, as we've just spoken about with those latest job figures, the economy seems to be booming back, roaring back to life after COVID. And there's some argument, if you like, that, well, perhaps we don't need such a high overseas migration. From, you know, recent figures are around 180,000, 190,000 people a year. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has said in recent weeks that once those borders reopen in 1 or 2 years' time, that will could potentially even increase up to around 210,000.
Yep.
I just wanted to get your take on, you know, how important is that overseas migration? Do we need such high numbers, given that, you know, the economy seems to be doing fairly well on its own without those migrants?
Okay, look, it's a good question. The first thing to note is that the reason people talk about population growth when we talk about economic growth is that essentially there's two things that drive economic growth, and it has to be one of these two. It's either population, so there's more people making stuff and buying stuff, or it's an increase in productivity. The same number of people just producing and therefore being able to buy and spend more. It's a mixture of those two, and there's really nothing else that can drive economic growth. So you've got to have one or the other or both. Productivity growth has actually been pretty lackluster.
It has been very flat.
For a decade or so. Yeah.
Mm.
Right. So where the growth has been coming from, therefore, has had to be population. And if you look at GDP per capita, so sort of strip out the population impact, GDP growth has been pretty sloppy. I mean, it's been positive, but not much over the, you know, I mean, I'm talking a decade, 2 decades. So that's the first point. So yes, we need population growth. I mean, need in inverted commas, assuming that you want to see economic growth. We either need population growth or we need productivity growth. productivity and population would be the optimal. The second thing to note is that, yes, the economy has roared back from the COVID slowdown. No question. As you said, you know, we've talked about the employment numbers already. We look at the latest GDP numbers for the first quarter of this year and, you know, 1.8 quarter on quarter and 1.2 from last year. And we're back above where we were last year and all of that great stuff. And it sounds fabulous. What you need to remember is if we're looking at GDP, and this is a way that people often don't look at GDP, is if you wanted to look over the year, you sum up the four quarters. Yeah, so you take how much our economic activity over the four quarters. If you do that for the first quarter of this year, so sum up Q1, Q4, 3-2 from last year and compare it to the same period last year, so if you've done the same exercise in the first quarter of 2020, we're down 2.4%. So yes, the economy's roared back from a slump, but if we compare where we are to where we were, we're still down. We're recovering from a very big downturn. So yes, the economy's doing well, but it's still got ground to make up. We lost so much during the COVID era that even with this really solid bounce, we're still below where we should be. And we're certainly below where we would be if we'd sort of projected forward on a normal growth trend from pre-COVID. So yes, things look great, but we still need to grow more if we're going to make up the slack. And that brings us to the sort of final point around this, is that you're quite right, and we've already discussed this issue of population growth, but that tends to be a more sort of medium long-term issue. If you're going to see long-term growth in the economy, we need to see long-term improvements in productivity and long-term population growth. In the short term, when you see a massive reduction and a contraction, as we saw in COVID, there's masses of capacity in the economy. There's masses of capacity in the system being underutilized. So when we bounce, there's plenty of spare capacity, whether it's human capital, labor market, or simply tools and equipment and factories that have been sitting idle or planes that have been sitting on the tarmac. There's lots of capacity which can easily be picked up again, and that's what's seen the bounce. So yes, you can argue we don't need, in inverted commas, as high a level of international migration, but if we don't, then we need to see, if we want to see continued growth, we need to see it coming from productivity, or we need to see natural growth. You know, people need to be starving bigger families, or we simply accept that, in fact, you know, this sort of holy grail of continuous economic growth perhaps isn't the way we want to be going, you know, and that's a genuinely valid question. You know, do we need to see GDP growth continually go up?
It's a big debate. I think it's a balancing act, really, isn't it, for the feds, is that how do you get that balance right in terms of that overseas migration? How long can we let it run with these borders closed? As you said, how long can that slack be picked up?
Right, exactly. And what we're seeing already is that clearly some of that slack, or a lot of it's been picked up, and we're already starting to see the impacts of that. I mean, I'm sure you've spoken to people, I've certainly spoken to people, where they're running into labour force issues in terms of skill shortages. You know, people are struggling to get workers.
Across a whole range of industries, across a whole range of businesses.
Absolutely, and across the whole of the country. And part of that will be the fact that a lot of the skilled migrants, as you mentioned, who would have been coming in taking up those positions, simply aren't here anymore. And what we're seeing is, despite some really good improvements in things like job seeker numbers are coming down sharply, online vacancy advertising is through the roof, job advertising absolutely through the roof, especially in Cairns, is very, very strong. And yet, in Cairns, we haven't seen a huge pickup in employment. And all of that is pointing towards the fact that, and then we know that there's these skill shortages. So it's pointing to the fact, to me, that we're seeing something of a skills mismatch, in the sense that we've got people who are unemployed, still on job seeker. So, you know, the recipients at Centrelink is still higher than it was, a good deal higher than it was a year ago or 2 years ago. And yet people are still struggling to find workers. So what that suggests to me is the people sitting in the dole queues at Centrelink don't have the same skills as the people, you know, required, who are looking for people to work. So there's a skills mismatch there. It's like walking
a tightrope, no doubt, and it's going to be increasingly difficult, I think, over coming months, how we get that balancing act right. And we haven't even spoken about the concept of full employment. You know, there's talk about somewhere between 4 and 5%, at least nationally, is close to full employment. And so you've utilised, you've maxed out our labour force, which is where that migration comes in. Pete Faulkner from CONUS, great insights. Thanks so much for being on The King Review.
Thanks, Gavin. A pleasure.